This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Cashing Out with your host, Dustin Sweetelson, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Yeah, buddy, welcome on in. September the 8th, be with you on a Tuesday night. I'm Dustin Sweetelson, and this is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Appreciate you making us part of your night. However you may be tuning in, SiriusXM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. We got a fun one lined up for you tonight. We don't have live football, but it is right around the corner. Feels like our last dip, our last gasp of really focusing on Major League Baseball for a night, as we do have a plethora of games currently going on in our window of action. Five to be exact, make that six to be exact. Diamondbacks and Royals in the 11th inning. This is my lone play for the day. 4-3, Diamondbacks with the lead, top of the 11th. We are looking for a walk-off win from Kansas City. We took them plus 105. It has been a low-scoring game. The last two games have been low-scoring in this series. And right now, Arizona, a team that, they just tacked on another run. A team that needs a win like this, because of the wild card picture in the National League, they're hoping to finish the job here now up by two. They're a half game up on the Padres, who we should mention are also in action. And the Friars are trailing the Washington Nationals as we're in the sixth inning. San Diego is plus $1.12. Washington is minus 146 right now. A lot of implications as far as that wild card picture are up in the air, and that includes in the American League, with the Toronto Blue Jays playing in Sacramento, taking on the A's. As we enter that game, it's already in action. The Toronto Blue Jays are 1.5 games back of the Cleveland Guardians, who are in that third slot thanks to their win over Baltimore earlier today. They're up 1.5 games, a little bit of wiggle room with Toronto chomping at their heels, trying to make up some ground. Blue Jays have the lead 2-1 on the A's. If Toronto is going to keep pace with Cleveland here, they're going to have to finish the job in a stadium where anything can go, with the power, with the short alleys, with the elevation. I'm not sure we're done with the runs being scored with the Blue Jays and A's. Rangers lead the Mariners 4-0. That is a battle of AL West teams, but Seattle is not in contention in that division. IMO. They're six games back of the wild card. Feels like that's going to be their only chance getting in, but they're just running out of runway. Are the Seattle Mariners. By the way, in Kansas City, Kauffman Stadium, we are going to go to the bottom of the 11th inning, 5-3. Arizona with the lead on the road on the Kansas City Royals. Right now in the betting market, Kansas City's plus 353, Arizona minus 538. 8.5 is the total. Here's the thing. Arizona's bullpen stinks. I don't know why there should be any belief in Arizona here. You got the ghost runner starting on second. Well, I'm not going to take Kansas City plus 341. I don't think it's crazy down by two, because you get that runner and a double can breed doubles and all of a sudden things can flip. But I do think the plus 1.5, see, it just moved. It was plus 1.5, minus 130, or minus 139. It's now minus 143. I just want to see what I can get here. I can get plus 1.5, minus 32. Let's do it. Let's have a little bit of fun here on a Tuesday night. Little funsies bet on Kansas City plus 1.5, minus 132. I think they can play to run, lose by a run at worst, but we should be getting at least one in the bottom half of the 11th inning. As I'm updating these scores, they're moving in real time. Make it move, baby. Washington, 3-0 over San Diego. It was 1-0 a moment ago. What just went down? As the Washington Nationals have plated a couple more runs against Randy Vasquez, this looks like, was it Morales? No. Brady House has driven in two. Brady House, two RBIs for him. I believe he hit a single. Is it a two RBI single? I don't think he had a double. Double. Two RBI double for Brady House, the third baseman. That makes it 3-0 Washington. Another bullpen that stinks, the Nationals. If you wanted to, you could get San Diego at plus 296, a little bit under 3-1. Your in-game total 6.5. I think I would just prefer to go over 6.5. I know you get the juicy payday at the plus 296, but if you think San Diego can get back into this game, right, then we're looking at seven runs. If they can tie it up, we're looking at six runs, seven runs. So we're going to go over on this one with it being a 3-0 game. You're going to need three from San Diego. Boom, that's six right there. Dodger Stadium, developing situation, 2-2 game in the third. Teoscar Hernandez hits one to center. Center fielder for Cincinnati dives. It goes past him. Now Teoscar tries for the inside the park home run, and he's thrown out at home plate. Oh, Teoscar, what are we doing here? You saw him, too, rounding second, heading for third. I don't think there was any chance he was going to stop at third, but he was thrown out by about five steps, and that was the final out of the third inning. There's a general rule in baseball. Don't make the last out of an inning at third base. What about home plate? Feels like that's pretty bad as well for Teoscar Hernandez there, because if he's on third and they can drive him in, all of a sudden we are looking at a one-run lead for the Dodgers. Instead, we are going to go to the top half of the fourth inning. 2-2 is the score. Cincinnati's plus 202. The Dodgers, with Skubal on the bump, still minus 275. Let's check in on Tarek Skubal and how he's doing in this start at home for the Dodgers. Thus far in three innings of work, three innings, two hits, two runs, one walk, three strikeouts at 50 pitches. Not very economical. Not that I'm Jim Cramer over here, but that is certainly not a pace that you'd like for him to keep up, because he's probably not getting through six if this keeps up for Tarek Skubal here. So we'll keep you updated on that action as it moves along all night long. We're in the 11th now. Runner on second for Kansas City, trailing Arizona 5-3. I'll keep you posted on what happens in that game, because we are now invested at plus 1.5 on the Royals at minus 132 juice. But we got a fun show lined up tonight. I'm really looking forward to deep diving into NFL, college football, as these numbers have been out for a while in the National Football League. They've been pounded to death in some regards. In some other areas, I'm shocked at certain props not being available right now. I don't really understand what's happening, but most should be up that you're looking to bet. And with that, we're going to go back in time. We're going to go look last year. Which defenses were the best and the worst at defending certain positions? Because we like to bet a lot of player props on the show. I just think that those numbers are a little bit more exploitable than the sides and totals, which that's the most efficient market in all of sports betting, is NFL sides and totals. I mean, the props are something that if you have a fantasy mind, if you've played DFS in the past, that you can find bets that make sense. And also, if you bet them early like we like to, on a Tuesday when they start dropping into Wednesday, by the time kickoff happens on Sunday, you could set up some 3, 4, even 5 yard middle sometimes if you get the best of the number and you're going over for the most part. To me, if you're going to bet unders and player props, you're waiting till kickoff, because the market's going to drive those things up, 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 and up. And then all of a sudden you can come back the other way and say, you guys have pushed this number way too far in one direction. But we're going to analyze tight ends, running backs, receivers, all later on in the program. We've got a game coming up on Wednesday. Rematch of the Super Bowl, Seattle taking on New England, this one in the Pacific Northwest. And we're also going to break down the first touchdown market. What happened with these two teams a year ago? Who were they allowing touchdowns to early? Who were they scoring with early? Which positions are the ones we're looking to identify? We will wind up with five bets on first touchdown. What I like to do is split a unit over those five. Little fun game I stole from Ryan Kramer, Sports Gambling Podcast Network. If you're figuring out how to manage your bankroll for first touchdown, just do that. You don't go full unit on any of these. You take one, you split it up, and if you hit enough of these throughout the season, like I had a good year last year where I hit a 33-1, I remember, on what's his name? Ollie Gordon for Miami in early in the season in primetime. That paid for a lot of mistakes the rest of the year. And I hit probably 7, 8, 9, something like that between the primetime games. That's really the only time I mess with them. I'm not messing with them on just a run-of-the-mill random Sunday game. But if it's a Thursday night, it's a Monday night, it's a Sunday night, I have no problem playing with some of these first touchdown props with all the eyes on those games. We'll also get some best bets from some friends of the show. Mike Carver, bottom of this hour, his favorite plays in the NFL. Stuart Durst, as sharp as it comes when it comes to betting on player props. Zach Bigelow on college football in our final hour of the show. And legendary handicapper Scott Spritzer joins us with his favorite plays for college football week 2 and the National Football League. But right now, we got a bet on life support. Can that one get through? It does not. We're going to lose the stupid Royals bet. I swear to God, I hit the air, and I'm just trying to find a little something to do here, find a bet for us to have together. Every time a bet comes out of my mouth when we start the show, it's a loser. I got to stop doing it, but I'm just trying to find something for us to sweat together, and it looked like a good situation against a bullpen that I hate, but I think we're retiring. We're retiring from bets in the opening segment of the show. If I want to come up with them later on, I want to come up with them in the third segment, the second hour, the final hour, we can do that. The first segment, I got to stop placing these bets. Also, I'm having a terrible hair day. I don't know if you're watching on YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app. Remember, you can tune in that way. Plus, listen to the show, SiriusXM channel 189, radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. I'm trying a new product. It's not going well. What's weird is I don't have a lot of hair. It's disappearing by the day. Sometimes it feels like by the hour and the minute. But I'm trying this new putty clay sort of thing, and my hair will not stay. It looks super greasy, and it's weird because there's not that much hair for it to stick to. So why does it look this way? I digress. Update in Seattle. It looks like we might have a three-run home run. That is by the Mariners, who've just cut the Texas lead to one. Fourth inning, two outs. Lazaro Montes goes 474 to center field, and we've got a one-run game. Texas with the lead 4-3. Rangers, -197 on the money line. Mariners, +$1.49 in that contest. That is a massive swing, literally and figuratively, in that contest. While we were starting the air to join on the air, I should note, the Brewers walked off the Cubbies 4-3 earlier tonight. That was the final score between those two teams in the National League Central. Milwaukee cashes -193 on the money line as the Miz Kid, who is inevitably going to be your National League Cy Young Award winner. I think he had 6 1/3 innings, 9 strikeouts in this contest against the Cubs. Let me just pull that up here real quickly. Miz finishes 6 1/3, 4 innings, 1 earned, 9 strikeouts. And Cam Schlittler lowered his ERA to 2.01 tonight with his performance, 7 innings pitched, and double-digit strikeouts once again for the righty from the New York Yankees. More cashing out coming up on the other side of VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Cashing out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Coming at you from the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas, I'm Dustin Sweetelson. This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. This time tomorrow, we will be talking about an actual NFL football game. The New England Patriots go to Seattle to take on the defending world champion, Seattle Seahawks. We look at that number right now. It opened 4. It's down to 3.5 total. Slight drop, 45 down to 44 and a hook. I'm sure this is not going to be where we close before kickoff coming up on Wednesday night. Then we'll have a game on Thursday. We'll have games all weekend long as well. Saturday with the college, Sunday with the NFL. It will feel like it's supposed to feel. That's the only thing that I can tell you is on Saturday watching wall-to-wall college football, it just felt right in the world. And that's how this weekend's going to feel as the NFL comes back into our life beginning on Wednesday. Let's look at the top stories coming out of the league, and we do it with the three-point stance. All right, no worries. We'll hop into the first story here in the three-point stance. As some key players from the aforementioned Patriots-Seattle game, San Francisco and the Rams, where the Rams are right now laying 3.5 at most shops, 4 where I sit at Circa, total down 49, down to 48.5. Circa, the one of 3 48s currently out there in the betting market as we sit here. Travion Henderson for the Patriots, he's been ruled out for week 1. We love that because last night we talked about Ramondre Stevenson over on his receiving yard prop. It just made sense because of the matchup against the Seahawks. But more importantly, he's about to get bell cow work. He's not coming off the field because I don't know if you guys have looked at the Patriots depth chart at running back these days. I don't know anyone after those two, Henderson and Stevenson. It might as well be a Madden create a player. Henderson's not going to be in the game for New England. That came out earlier in the day. And then in the Rams and Niners game, Aaron Donald's not traveling to Australia. That was the big story earlier today. Aaron Donald not traveling to Australia, and he is not going to be a part of this for this week. And I wouldn't be shocked if they slowly mix him in and let him ramp up as the season goes on. This is a guy who hasn't played a snap in 2 years. He's 35 years old. He is still Aaron Donald, but they never came out and said Aaron Donald's going to be the old Aaron Donald. Like, we're going to treat him that way where he plays 99, 90% of the snaps, whatever he used to play. I think you're looking at Aaron Donald picking his spots that make sense. And with so much on the line this year for the Rams, they just don't need to use him before they really need him this year. Also helps me on my San Francisco bet +3.5 because it's still a salary cap league. And when you have $20 million tied up in one player, that's $20 million you're not spending in other areas of your depth chart. So because of that, I do think it is a bit of a weakness potentially here for the Rams, who don't have many coming into the season as your Super Bowl favorite. Christian Barmore, the defensive tackle for New England, he has a knee injury. He is not on the final injury report for week one against Seattle. Nick Amanwori, the second-year safety out of South Carolina, who was critical last year in this defense, being as dominant as they were with his versatility, he's questionable. Dealing with an ankle, Brady Henderson from ESPN reporting earlier today that it appears unlikely he's going to play, but also another safety, Ty Okada, he is questionable for this matchup as well. He missed practice 2 days in a row. That's why I kind of like the over in this game. I know everyone talks about Seattle's defense, but New England got better offensively. A.J. Brown comes over. More importantly, it's another year of Drake May where the game's going to slow down for him. He's going to grow as a passer. And without those guys on the back end, I think the tight ends, Hunter Henry, might be able to feast against this defense to some degree. So I kind of like the over in this game because I think Seattle, with a new offensive coordinator, they're trying to get in sync, but they have so many weapons and Darnold wants to spread it around. I think they're going to be pretty aggressive against the Patriots. I lean over 44.5, but more importantly, it's because of those safeties potentially being out for the Seahawks with the injury news there. Myles Garrett, we found out for the Rams, is going to play. And then 49ers OC Clay Kubiak, he said George Kittle looks good for week one. And Raheem Morris, the DC for the Niners, said Nick Bosa is going to play against the Rams this week. A team that I am going to be monitoring all year long is the Detroit Lions, because I understand everyone's argument for them going over their win total. I understand the betting market having them favored to win the NFC North. What I don't understand is people believing that this team is that special. When we saw the weaknesses a year ago on the offensive line and in the secondary, and they enter this season with weaknesses on the offensive line, and stay with me, the secondary, they're going to be without two safeties. They no longer have Terry and Arnold, and when they had Terry and Arnold at corner, they still had issues at the cornerback position. On top of that, they're starting a rookie on the offensive line. Their center is probably not going to be able to go in Cade Mays, who they added in the offseason. And on top of all of that, they still have not found a complimentary pass rusher for Aiden Hutchinson on the other side. But everyone's just crowning him already. I love Dan Campbell. You love Dan Campbell. Everyone loves Dan Campbell. Here's the problem. Dan Campbell was made a superstar when he had Ben Johnson. And he was unable to replace him a year ago with John Morton. This year, he brings in Arizona offensive coordinator Drew Petzing to take over. This is what Campbell had to say about his new OC and his quarterback, Jared Goff, thus far in camp.
I think just their ability to work with each other and I feel like pull the best out of each other, if you will. You know, I think, you know, Drew brings clarity in some areas, which is good, and that's always going to help Goff. But I think at the same time, Goff has these things that he sees that he likes that we're capable of doing with what we have, and he knows he can do it to where, you know, Drew is open to those, and we've used some of those. And I think that's a good thing, man, because I think that's how you don't stay still, man. You continue to grow, and with where our quarterback is, that playing at a high level to be able to continue to test him and push him, but also allow input and allow him to do things that, even though it may be a little new, a new wrinkle, that he feels comfortable trying, it's a good thing. And then in regard to something Drew wants, he may not love it, but he's willing to go and give it a go. I think that expands his own horizon. So I just think it's a good give and take, and I think, I think those guys to this point have worked really well together.
I got to tell you, there was nothing I saw inspiring from the Arizona offense a year ago. Even trying to find those silver linings where I said, you know what? That guy calling plays, who's diagramming the X's and O's, he could really turn Jared Goff into something. And let's be fair about Jared Goff. You have to be creative to succeed with him. Not every coordinator is going to plug and play and get the most out of Goff, as we saw a year ago, right? His numbers are mostly comparable. When you go completion percentage, he went from 72.4% down to 68%. It's a drop, but it's not a crazy drop. Yards went from 46.29 down to 45.64. That's not crazy. Touchdowns from 37 to 34, also not insane. Here was the difference a year ago. This offense lacked explosion. Jared Goff's yards per attempt dropped 8.6 down to 7.9. I don't know why we think Drew Petzing is the offensive mastermind to unlock Jared Goff. There's only been a couple guys to win with Jared Goff as the play caller. Sean McVay and Ben Johnson. Those are two of the most brilliant offensive minds of the last 10 to 20 years in the National Football League. I'm not sure I have the confidence everyone else has in the new OC for the Lions. The schedule, I get your argument there. The schedule is absolutely easy. But if we're talking about once we get to the playoffs, I don't see the upside in Detroit. A team I'm trying to talk myself into the upside is the Atlanta Falcons. The problem is their quarterback is Tua Tagovailoa, and thus far through three preseason games, that offense has not been inspiring. However, their superstar running back, who I think might be my favorite player in today's NFL, went on the Rich Eisen show. It is Bijan Robinson. He said, "Don't worry, guys. I'm not nervous about the way our offense has looked lately.
I know situations happen, you know, plays happen, and, you know, there's a lot of people that'll talk about it. But ultimately, like, what we do in practice has been fun to watch, fun to be a part of. I know people don't see it, but, you know, that's why I just can't wait to get to the game. But, you know, we're all confident in him, man. Like, he's, you know, been doing great in training camp, you know, and it's cool to, you know, he has experience. He has so much experience in this league. And, you know, I know that we have been supporting him through everything. And, you know, our job is to make him look good on the field. And, you know, we just say, just get the ball in our hands and, you know, we'll do the rest for you. So, like, you know, I know him having that confidence in us has been great for him. And so now, like, it's our job to go out there on Sunday and put it to show, put it to work, and just have fun with it.
Okay, they're going to use their playmakers. He's going to get them the ball and let them do the work. I love the under this week in Atlanta and Pittsburgh, because I don't think Tua is capable of pushing the ball downfield. I think Pittsburgh's fairly limited as well. I bet the under 41.5 a few weeks ago. It's up to 42.5. I think that is completely wrong. I love the under this week with the Falcons and the Steelers. Bijan is going to be running the ball all over the place. Clock's going to be moving. I don't anticipate a ton of points, regardless of how unscared he is about what he's seen. Hey, the wait's over. College football's back. The NFL season kicks off tomorrow. Now's the time to become a VSiN Pro. Get your edge now. You'll get our NFL post preseason updated guide, our college football betting guide. You can get started for $9.99 or save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe now.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Oh, baby, back at it on Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson, coming to you as always from the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Update in the Major League Baseball. Rangers lead the Mariners 6-3. Danny Jansen just made it 9-3 with a three-run shot in the fifth inning off Bizardo, who he stinks this year. Blue Jays on top of the A's 4-1. The Nationals in the eighth, still leading the Padres 3-1. Giants on top of the Cardinals 2-0 with the bases loaded and one out with a chance to add to their lead. Bottom five at Dodger Stadium. It's the Dodgers 2 and the Reds 2 with Tarek Skubal on the bump. I'll keep you updated on everything that happens as it moves along in the baseball. But football's back in our lives. And we have to lock in some bets for week one. And to help us do that, we welcome in one of the sharpest dudes out there. He is Mike Carver. Check him out. Betting weekly at @CarverHigh_on X. And he joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Carver, it's great to see you. And it's great to talk a little pigskin today. How are we feeling about things?
Dustin, always great to be back with you. Football is back, baby. We were just talking about a long summer, baseball, blah, blah, blah. Here we go, baby. It's on. Football's back. Let's go.
Well, it gets started on a Wednesday, which is certainly unique for the NFL.
Yeah.
And it's a rematch of the Super Bowl. I got to tell you, from a side perspective, I understand both sides of this argument. You have on one end New England, where they want to show they were better than they looked like in the Super Bowl against the Seattle team. But the reason why I think I might be on your side and laying it with the Seahawks here is I don't know if any Super Bowl champion's ever been more disrespected coming into the following year. You are laying the 3 points with the Seahawks. Talk to me about it, man.
You just hit the nail right on the head, honestly, Dustin. I feel like every year when we talk about these opening night games with the Super Bowl champion, can you remember a year where a team was being as, let's just say it, disrespected as the Seahawks are coming into this year? I mean, a team in their own division, the heaviest favorite years to win the Super Bowl, no one's even talking about them. No one's even recognizing them. And they're going to go open the season at home against the team that, let's be honest, they smashed in the Super Bowl. They dominated the game. They were the better team pillar to post. They didn't lose that much off the team. Yes, I know Kenneth Walker's with Kansas City now. There's a couple other things, but the real meat of this team is still here. I think that they're coming. If I was Mike McDonald, Dustin, I'd be writing on that board every single day for the last month and a half of camp. And we just won the Super Bowl and nobody really cares. I think they're coming out with a big performance on Wednesday night.
Yeah. What I would do if I was Mike McDonald, I would just take every article talking about how the Rams are the best team we've ever seen assembled and nobody writing about the Seahawks and just say, they think you stink. They're not even putting you into this conversation. This team's in your division and you punked them twice a year ago and it mattered.
And I think the Rams are very good, Dustin. We all do. We all think the Rams are very good, but are they that much? I mean, they're around 5-1. Everyone else is 10 or more. Are they that much better than everyone else? I'm not there. I'm
so
just not.
I think the market's correct, but on principle, I can't bet that. I have to look for shots
either.
And opportunity. Like, no. You 5-1 to tie up my money until Valentine's Day? Like, that's yeah. When you're cashing that bet. Valentine's Day, legitimately, on the Super Bowl. Right. Like, that's a long time for 5-1. Mike Carver is our guest. Check him out. Betting Weekly Live. Part of the Bet Rivers team at @CarverHigh_on X. Let's talk about the Rams. They open in Australia against the Niners. Everyone's talking to sleep experts like they know what's going to happen with the travel plans. Rams laying 3.5. Total's 48.5. You're looking at that total. Are you going to go over or under here?
It's such a tough handicap, Dustin, from this aspect. And I know you've been talking about it. First of all, it's Australia. Which in itself, I'm not the biggest fan of these international games that the NFL does. I think it's such a different product than the regular games that we get on Sunday. Even these Europe games that we've had and they increase every single year, I don't feel that those are mostly played on the same footing as a standard NFL Sunday. So what am I supposed to think about Australia? And you have both teams doing completely opposite things. You got the Niners who are spending a whole week there. You got the Rams who are spending like 12 hours there before the game. It's completely bizarre. I have no idea who's going to win the game, but it feels like those two things lean me more to under than anything else. And that's just the general consensus I have in the internationals. I usually play under in them because they are a different type of game and they tend to be more sloppy for the most part. And yes, you do get a few that do pop off and you get some overs. But for the most part, they've been sloppy games. And I can't think of a better situation to get a sloppy under game than one where a team is flying halfway across the world 24 hours before. It's just very weird, Dustin. So it's under for me with this 48.5.
Also, the field's going to be weird. These players are going to be thrown off. It's a cricket field, and the fans are really far away. It's circular, kind of oval. So, like, I just think everything's a little bit off. And, you know, like, it also seems like the foreign turf makers, field makers, whatever you want to say, the groundskeepers, they never get the grass right. It's never an NFL which is crazy for the NFL with so much money on the line that they don't have people over there like making sure everything is exactly how they want it. Let's talk about another game. You're going to attack a low total and you want to go over here. It's the Dolphins taking on the Raiders. Right now we are looking at the Raiders laying 3.5. I'm seeing a 40.5 out there at DraftKings. You think the over is the right side?
Definitely not the sexiest game on the card on Sunday, right? Dustin, with the Dolphins and the Raiders to start the season. But I think when you sometimes get two bad teams, and people expect this to be two of the five worst teams maybe in the NFL this year, sometimes you get crazy games. They played a crazy game last year with each other. And yes, the teams are very different. I think that Willis is going to be able to move the ball for Miami. I think their defense is going to stink. And I think that that's going to be an opportunity for the Raiders to maybe do some damage. And even if, you know, Genty, obviously this has been back and forth, going to play, not going to play, whatever. I mean, I think Washington's good. The kid that they drafted at Arkansas is going to be the backup. So I think they're going to be fine in the running game no matter what. I think they're going to be able to put points up on the Dolphins. I honestly, Dustin, think both these teams get in the 20s. I think it's a smash over for the Raiders and the Dolphins on Sunday.
Oh, I think that would be fun. That would be fun to get started like that. Also, I just want to note one of my favorite offensive rookie of the year bets, Chris Bell, 70-1, was named a starter today for Miami. That's a big number on a bad team that's going to be losing, chucking the ball around a lot. Chatting with our buddy Mike Carver, betting analyst, betting weekly live at @CarverHigh_on X. Another side you're going to look at for week one, it's the Ravens and the Colts. Battle of the Mayflower moving truck. Baltimore laying 3.5 on the road. Totals 47. My dad's a Colts fan. It's the first time my mom ever saw him cry was the day that they moved from Baltimore. Totals 47.5. What do you want to do in this matchup?
I'm going to take the Colts with the 3.5. You know, there's a lot of home dogs this week, Dustin. There's a lot. And I got a feeling that at least a couple of them are going to bark here. You look over in the past, week one, home dogs, I think it's about 56%, somewhere in that area, in terms of their cover percentage over the last 20 years or so. And out of all the teams that are home dogs, I kind of feel the best about the Colts. Maybe it's the fact that the Ravens, of course, have a new coach with Jesse Minter. Maybe it's the fact that I just feel like the Colts being healthy for week one. We saw how good they were in September, October of last year. There's a few things rolled into it. The hook plays a big part of it as well. I think 3.5, obviously, is so key to have. The Colts are the one side that's a home dog this week that really attractive to me for a number of those reasons. I think they're going to give the Ravens kind of all they can handle in week one on the road.
Mike, you are a great player of the home run props. I believe you hit at least one tonight. You usually look for a four. You hit four tonight?
Four for four tonight. You have this four? Was and look, this you is four for four
me.
Tonight.
You gotta be that's ridiculous.
And it's tough because some nights I come on, like I know I was on with JJ and Mitch a few months ago, and I had a couple and I had one hit, and it was, but you know how home runs go, Dustin, because you play them. It's very feast or famine sometimes when it comes, but when you get in a wave and they all start rolling, yeah, four for four tonight. Caminero, Churio, Okamoto, and Seager. Four for four tonight. We had a good night.
But you also dabble in the touchdown scorer market. Give me the three you like for week one in the NFL.
The three I like for week one. Well, first of all, I think the Bucs and the Bengals could also be one of those games where points are going to be at a play. Yep. I don't believe that just because the Bengals got Dexter Lawrence in the front of their line, that all their defensive problems are fixed. And I think that that's going to allow the Bucs to score. And I think the price is too high on Bucky Irvin. Plus 125 for him to score a touchdown. He's obviously going to be one of the main guys in the Tampa Bay offense in a game that I think could see a lot of points. I think it's a really good price for Bucky Irvin, so I'm going to go to him. Justin Jefferson's plus 165, Dustin. If there's anything that the Vikings have wanted to accomplish this entire offseason, which has now led down the road of Kyler Murray being in the quarterback position, it's that they know they need to get JJ the ball more than they did last year. They need him to score more touchdowns than he did last year. He gets one, and then the big dog, Dustin, OBJ plus 750 Sunday night for the Giants against the Cowboys. I think he's going to have a big year, and that starts on Sunday night.
He's Mike Carver. Check him out. Betting Weekly Live weekdays on Because We Win Betting Weekly. Appreciate the time, brother.
Cashing out here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Live Major League Baseball going on right now. Welcome back into Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. You're listening to VSiN, the sports betting network. Dodgers with the lead on the Reds, 3-2, as Will Smith hit a home run in the first. For the Reds, Ellie De La Cruz with his 25th of the year in the third off of Skubal. Since then, Teoscar Hernandez has driven in a run. Tommy Edman driven in a run for the Dodgers. That's how they're out in front. Should add, though, with one out in the sixth, Eugenio Suarez is at the plate with a runner on first, representing that tying run at first base with one out against Tarek Skubal. So big moment potentially in this matchup between the Dodgers and the Reds. Looking at the betting market as far as this one is currently concerned, we've got the Dodgers minus 890. The Reds are plus 507, 7.5 is the total. I'm not betting it. I'm not doing the live baseball very much right now because I'm just getting slammed. But I don't hate the idea of thinking about the dog here. I don't trust this Dodgers bullpen. It's a close game. They're not really in a spot where they're just closing out every team left and right, but I am not going to bet on that game right now. Rangers lead the Mariners thanks to that three-run shot by Danny Jansen last inning. 9-3 is the score, sixth inning in that contest. Giants on top of the Cardinals in the eighth, 2-0. We're looking at a 4-1 game with the Nationals leading the Friars, the Padres, in the eighth inning at Petco Park. In-game totals 8.5, though, which leads me to believe something may be brewing there in that game because, let's see, there are runners on second and third and nobody out. This could be a moment here for the Padres. Let me see. Let me double check. What just happened in this game? 4-1, runners on first and second. It's the bottom of the eighth. Who is up? That is the question. Tatis is up. Okay. Cooking with a little bit of juice here. If you're feeling spicy, plus 164 on San Diego, nobody out. Tying runs at the plate. Tatis has been hot. Speaking of this game, can I get this game on the far left bottom TV guys back there? Because unless it's not on TV somewhere, but it's the eighth inning. We got a little bit of drama happening at Petco Park. Blue Jays on top of the A's in the eighth inning in Sacramento. Scores 4-2. Toronto's laying 1,000, plus 547 with the A's. Your total right now is 6.5 in that one. Toronto needs this game to keep pace as they are 1.5 back of the Guardians for that final spot in the American League wild card. More on these games throughout the night, but right now we have to tackle the top stories in college football. It's time for the campus crawl. And we're going to begin with the controversy from over the weekend, where I'm sure you've heard about it by now if you're listening to this network or you care about sports, but Western Michigan was robbed at the Big House because Big Ten officials said that there was additional time on the clock after one Hail Mary attempt and Michigan threw the ball and it was touched by a player who was out of bounds, that there technically was a second left on the clock, and the Wolverines got a second crack at a Hail Mary. Following that game, we played it on the show yesterday. The AD for Western Michigan said they accepted the Big Ten's ruling, and it sounded like we were just going to move on with our lives. That was until today when MAC Commissioner John Steinbrecher issued a statement calling for the NCAA FBS Oversight Committee and College Football Playoff to recognize Western Michigan as the actual winner of the game for purposes of their respective rankings, evaluations, and selection deliberations, and take such other corrective action as it may be within their authority. He went on to add more to this, and I think he's correct. I thought it was pretty weak that Western Michigan was just doing tricks on Michigan's thing out there and not fighting in any way, shape, or form. I understand we live in a very weird world where there's more on the line than you see on the surface with Western Michigan. One, they got paid a lot of money to play that game, and I'm sure they'd like other big programs to give them a chance to do the same and maybe have another historic moment down the road. If they come out and they complain that they were robbed at the Big House in Ann Arbor, well, maybe other big schools will say, why are we going to welcome them into our building? Why are we going to take a chance on them? One, they can beat us. Two, they're crying. Like, I don't want to reward a program like that. I don't think that's the correct perspective, but I think maybe in the moment, that's what Western Michigan was thinking. What they should have done was defend their players, defend their program, defend their school. Show some pride. Stand up for yourself. Say that you were done dirty by the big, bad Big Ten. The MAC commissioner coming out having to defend you like this, I thought that was pretty weak for Western Michigan, but I think Steinbrecher's right, the commissioner of the MAC. If the College Football Playoff Committee does the right thing, and this is a rare instance where the human element could be a positive, if they win the MAC, and by the way, they just won the MAC, they can do it again. If the Broncos win their league, I think the committee should view what happened in Ann Arbor over the weekend in week one as if it was a win and say, you know what? They're technically, it's technically a loss, but we're going to say it's a win in our eyes because it should have been one. And I think that they'll have that feather in their cap for their resume if there's a debate between them and another group of six school that maybe doesn't have impressive out-of-conference wins. That's a win against the Big Ten team. And who knows, maybe Michigan was saving something for Oklahoma this week and they played it very safe and close to the vest and we're going to see a better Michigan team the rest of the way. We do not know. But my point is the human element is going to do exactly what Steinbrecher is requesting it to do, which is view that through the lens of a win for the Broncos on the road. The next story is a story that's not going to go anywhere until Dabo Swinney is eventually put out to pasture at Clemson. As he was asked by a reporter earlier today following their drubbing against LSU over the weekend in Death Valley, does he have any regrets about the roster construction this year? More importantly, not utilizing the transfer portal.
Do you regret anything about your offseason roster construction right now?
Chapel, you come with all these questions. I tell you, you're the gotcha guy. No, I don't. I don't, man. I regret being 0-1 right now. I regret that. But no, what can you ask me that at the end of the season? You know, the season ain't over. I mean, we got one game, we got 11 more. What if we go 11-1? You promised me you'll ask me that then?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'll answer it, all right? But I'm not answering questions like that, you know, Chapel. I know that's your role and that's in this environment, you know, to be the guy that wants to create all the controversy and ask the controversial questions. If that's who you are, that's fine. I get it. But I'll answer that in the season. We played one game. One game, all right? Did you play football?
No.
Okay, well, they give you 12 games, and at the end of the year, you count them up, all right? And you know, that's when those type of questions are fair to me. You know, not after one game to maybe the best team in the country. Maybe the best team in the country, all right? Now, other people have good teams and coaches and things like that too, so I give them credit. We got 11 more games. To go battle, then we'll count them up. Then you can ask me whatever question you want.
If asking that question after getting smoked, I mean absolutely bent over 51-10 by LSU, a whole new roster. If that's controversial, consider me Julius Caesar. Like, what are we even doing here? That was the most safe question a reporter could have asked. Do you have regrets about the roster? The roster stinks, bro. The roster's not even like the tip of the iceberg of what's wrong with Dabo Swinney. And I love Dabo Swinney. Dabo Swinney once fed me a meal back in the day. He said, look, you guys are here. You're covering Clemson. You're going to eat dinner with the Clemson Tigers tonight. He made us sit there and eat with the team. If you feed me, you're forever my friend. And as you can tell, I got a lot of friends. But Dabo Swinney is a great human being. He is a great guy. He's a great leader. He is everything I'm looking for as a head football coach. The one issue I have with Dabo Swinney is he has failed to evolve and the game is passing him by. It's not even just the idea of not using the transfer portal when everyone around you is finding ways to plug the gaps and improve every offseason. That way there are no drop-offs. That's not even the number one thing. It's on top of it. Thinking you can just go back to the glory days because it once worked. He brought in Chad Morris as the offensive coordinator. Chad Morris has been bouncing around since his days at Clemson, failing as a head coach, going from job to job for a reason, because it's dated. Just like everything Dabo's trying to do with this program right now, it is such a mess. Can we squeeze the last one in here, guys? Do we have time? Ryan Day talking about what he likes about Arch Manning. We have it?
Yeah, you think about that game last year between Julian and Arch, really their first starts. And I know maybe Arch had played a little bit before, but that was really their first games. And to where they are now, two totally different players, in my opinion. You watched it last year as Arch played. He got better and better and better. I thought he was playing some really good football at the end of the season, you know, and did some really good things in the first game of the year, this past Saturday. You know, he can beat you with his legs. He can beat you downfield. He can make the throws when he needs to. you know, he's really improved, and, you know, give him a lot of credit for putting the work in, and also give Sark and his staff credit for continuing to develop him, you know, and so, you know, he's going to have a great season, and he's going to be a great challenge for our defense.
Last year, the score was 14-7 between these two teams. I think we're going to get a lot of points. Ohio State lost a few first rounders and a couple second rounders off the defense. Both quarterbacks are more experienced right now. I'm leaning over 49.5 in Texas and Ohio State.